Welcome to Creepy Shit Podcast. I'm your host, Star. Every week, we're digging into real hauntings, paranormal encounters that'll make your skin crawl, and true crime cases that prove reality is way scarier than fiction. This is where we sit down, like the creepy weirdos we are, and unpack the darkest, most disturbing stories out there. And here's the thing. We're probably going to use some sarcasm and humor to get through some of this heavy stuff, because if we don't laugh, we'll definitely cry. So settle in and let's get to it, because sometimes the creepiest shit is also the truest. This is Creepy Shit Podcast. Hey, creepy crew. It's that time of year, am I right? Everyone's all cozy. The tree is up. Perhaps you got some Christmas shopping done already. What have you? Well, maybe you're one of the fortunate ones with family who talks about Christmas ghosts and telling spooky stories by the fire, and you think that's just a Hallmark thing, or maybe you know it from like Dickens and A Christmas Carol, but the Victorians, they were obsessed with ghost stories at Christmas. Like, it was a whole tradition. And fun fact, little sneak peek, there is going to be a bonus episode later this week where we are going to elaborate so much more on that. But today, this story is unreal, like perfect way to kick off like our whole holiday festivities. So, but back in the day, families would like gather, the nights were long and dark, and they'd scare the absolute crap out of each other. Like, seriously, what a time to be alive. Honestly, I would have loved that. But here's the thing. Now, some of these stories that were told and were passed down, they weren't just stories. So today we're diving into one of the most well-documented poltergeist cases in history. And I'm not talking about The Exorcist. And it didn't happen to like some random family. It happened to the Weasleys, which, just P.S., I so badly want to say Weasleys in that, but I digress. Yeah. Those Weasleys, the family that literally founded Methodism. A rector, his wife, their kids, and something they called Old Jeffrey, that decided to make their Christmas season an absolute friggin' nightmare. This case, I'm not kidding you guys today, this case has everything. We've got multiple witnesses, written documentation from the time, physical phenomenon that visitors have confirmed, and absolutely zero explanation that makes complete sense even 300 years later. So buckle up, Buttercup, and grab your favorite bevy, because we are going back to the future. December 1716. It's a drafty rectory in the English marshlands where something decided the Weasley family needed a very different kind of Christmas visitor. Here we go. Okay, we have officially landed in the UK. Epsworth, to be exact. It's this tiny market town in Lincolnshire, England, basically the middle of nowhere, surrounded by like marshes and fields. Again, I picture like the Weasley house from Harry Potter when this is being said. So it's cold, it's isolated, especially in winter. And in this town, there's a rectory, the house where the local rector lives. And that's where we meet the Wesley family. Samuel Wesley is the rector. He's this like stern, but like really educated guy. He went to Oxford. He writes poetry, very religious and very no-nonsense. Like the kind of guy who does not suffer fools. You get what I'm saying? And definitely does not believe in, no joke, his quote, supernatural bullshit. So keep that in mind. Now, his wife, oh, Susanna. Her name is Susanna. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. I've had a lot of coffee and I just had an ADHD moment, so you're welcome. Anyway, she is honestly remarkable for the time. She's mega intelligent, educated, ran basically a small school herself in their home teaching their kids. So, very practical lady, very grounded, not the kind of woman that would jump at shadows. Okay. And then, of course, we've got the kids. They got down, let me tell you. They had 19 children. Like, man, that's a lot of hippity dippity. That's all I'm saying. So, the sad thing is, though, is that, of course, not all survived, which is like actually, that's really typical for this time frame, unfortunately. But in 1716, they've still got a house like full of people, several daughters in their teens, and two sons whom you might have heard of, John Wesley, who's 13 at the time, and he's away at boarding school when all of this stuff that I'm about to tell you goes down, and then Charles Wesley. Now, these boys are going to grow up and they found the Methodist Church. So, and they become like famous preachers and they literally like change religious history. But in 1716, John's just a kid and he's about to miss like the wildest fucking shit ever that has ever happened to his family. Now, here's some context that you absolutely need for this. The Wesleys were not popular, like not popular in Epworth. Like Samuel was strict, judgmental AF, very, very much my way or the highway about religion. And the locals, like literally, kind of hated his ass. They were like, you know, you're a fucking prick and we don't like you. So his church had been set on fire twice, like actual fucking arson style. We hate you. Like, damn, that is wow. So someone even tried to like, and this is really malicious. This, in my opinion, okay, too far. But with what I'm about to say, but someone even tried to like actually burn down the rectory with the family inside. Now that's not cool. Okay. That's definitely not cool. So there's real human malice in this story, which makes what happens even more complicated. So it's a really tense household. Money's tight. It's cold. It's December. And something is about to go very, very, very wrong. Okay. And it's early December 1716. And it starts with knocking. Like always, always the knocking. FYI. I just have to share this really quick side story. I recently went to sushi with my mom, and we were sharing like a couple of things back and forth about like spooky situations. And she told me a story about how there was a night that she was asleep and she could hear knocking in her dream, and then woke up on the third knock, swearing that it was her door. And I'm like, please tell me you didn't open that door. And she's like, no, I didn't open the door. I'm like, good. Thank God. Because what if? Like, honestly. So I digress. This whole situation of course, starts with knocking. And it's just knocks at first. Robert Brown, he's the manservant, okay? And he hears it and he thinks someone's at the door, but there's nobody there. Then other people start hearing it. And it starts happening like on the walls, knocks on the floors, like, and knocks that don't even make sense, okay? Samuel Wesley, being Samuel Wesley, immediately decides that, oh, it's rats, which, ew. Or maybe the servant is like playing pranks, right? And he's not interested in entertaining the supernatural explanations because he is a man of God, and an educated man and an educated men do not believe in ghosts, right? Okay. But it keeps happening and it keeps getting louder. The family starts hearing other sounds. There's this noise, like someone winding like a jack, which is this like mechanical device that they used back then. You could totally look it up if you want to. It's kind of a cool little instrument, but very specific, okay? And a recognizable sound. But there's no jack being wound. There's like a gobbling noise, like a turkey, like a... So seriously, multiple family members describe it as gobbling like a turkey. What the fuck, right? Like, you know, and I want to say like, okay, you're kind of out in the desolate area anyway. So isn't it possible that there could have been turkeys? I'm just saying. But okay. So, and then come footsteps, heavy footsteps. Going up and down the stairs when everyone's accounted for. Footsteps in empty rooms and footsteps that step like right outside the door. Susanna, very practically, tries to like figure this all out, right? She follows the sounds. She checks the rooms. Nothing. No explanation. By mid-December, shit is escalating. Now, the knocks start to have patterns, like 3 knocks, 7 knocks, very deliberate. The sound of bottles smashing. And the funny thing is when they go check, there's no broken bottles. Like nothing is out of place. It's just the sound, which that's creepy. Then, okay, there's this distinctive noise, like someone is dragging something heavy across the floor above them. But then they go upstairs, right? And nothing's moved. Okay, I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Nope. 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 And here's... Oh, and then it starts to get physical. So here we go with the physical, right? The beds, and I say that plural, beds, start shaking. Not like, you know, a little tremor. No. The beds are shaking violently. The kids are in bed and suddenly they're being jostled around like they're in a flipping earthquake. And one of the daughters describes it as being lifted up in bed. Fuck no. No. Like your bed is so sacred. I love my bed. Fun fact, I am actually recording from my bed today, like not even joking. And no way, like you can mess with a lot of things in my house. Like I have no problem with that, but don't you touch my fucking bed. Like seriously, raise your hand if you agree with me on that. I would love to know. So doors are opening and closing on their own at this point. They'd latch a door, they'd turn around, and it would swing open. The latch would actually like lift itself, which... Now, the family's dog, rest assured, nothing bad happens to the dog, okay? Dog lives. But, and I love this detail because, dude, animals always fucking know, right? Like they always know when something is up. So the dog would whimper and hide before the phenomenon would start. Like it could sense it like coming and it would crawl under the furniture and refuse to come out, which, oh, I feel bad that you're like so scared, puppy. I love you. I don't even know you. You're like, you know, 300 years old, but I love you. And it's happening every single night. around 9:45 p.m. like clockwork, and again in the early mornings between 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. It's following a schedule, which is somehow more unsettling than if it were random. Like, am I right? Now, the family starts talking to it because, I mean, honestly, I mean, what else are you really going to do at that point, right? So they start calling it old Jeffrey. There was a guy named Jeffrey who had died in the house before the Wesleys moved in. So they just named it after him, which is honestly, that's a very English thing to do. And your house is being terrorized by an invisible entity. Eh, give it a polite nickname. It's all good. And here's where it gets really weird. Old Jeffrey seems to have a personality. First off, he hates Samuel's ass. Like, cannot stand that guy. Like, specifically, when Samuel would pray out loud, the knocking gets louder and, like, super aggressive. And when he's in a room, the activity intensifies. It's like, whatever this is, it has a personal grudge against the rector. But with Susanna and the kids, it's a totally different story. It's more gentle and still scary, but less violent. And Susanna even tries talking to it at one point. She says something like, "If you can speak, I wish you would." And there's this sound that she later described it, that it was kind of like this groan, like it was trying to respond to her, but can't. Oh, that is so, gnarly. Honestly, wow. Okay. So let me tell you about some of the specific incidences, because this is where it goes from weird noises to absolutely fucking terrifying. One of the daughters, Amelia, decides she's going to go and investigate. Very brave, right? Or very stupid, depending on how you want to look at it. She gets down on the floor. Oh my God. She gets down on the floor, looks under her bed to see if something's hiding there and making the noise. Girl, damn, I could not. Like, could you do that? Honestly, like, tell me. Like, I could not fucking do that. There is no way. No way would I do that. Nope. I'd leave and shut the door. Okay. So she feels then something run past her. She describes it as being like a badger, but with no head. What the actual fuck? Like a headless badger thing running around the rectory. That's the kind of detail, creepy crew, that you just cannot make up. It's way too weird. It's way too specific. Like, honestly. Then, on another night, the family is in bed, okay? And they'd often, like, huddle together when the activity was bad because, you know, safety in numbers, abso-fucking-lutely. And the bed curtains suddenly pull open, like, by themselves, with this loud rustling sound. Everyone sees it, and then the curtains get, like, pushed closed again by invisible hands. Oh my God. Like, can you imagine that? You're lying there in the dark, and the curtains around your bed just, you know, move on their own with force. I would have shit myself, like, honestly, like, absolutely not. Oh my gosh, this is seriously, I can't. Okay. But the incident that, like, I gotta, yes, okay. So the incident that really gets me, it's when Samuel decides he's had enough. He's a proud man, right? Like, he's not going to be intimidated in his own house by some whatever this is. So he stands up and he challenges it. He shouts into the empty room, basically saying, "Show yourself. face me. Stop being a coward. And the entire house freaking shakes. Like, not just a room, the entire structure. So violently that the family thinks the building is going to collapse. Like, furniture is rattling. Walls are trembling. It sounds like the world is ending at this moment. So Samuel, and very smart move here, never challenges it again after that. Even he knows when he's outmatched, which, all right, good on you for that. Now, there's this incident with money that I find so fascinating because it might be connected. This is my theory, though, okay? So, like, and I don't know for sure, but we're going to find out, because it might be connected to why this, all of this stuff, like, started happening in the first place. Because right before all of this began, we're talking maybe days or weeks before the knocking started, Susanna found money on her kitchen floor. Like, it just appeared there. She found it twice. Like, both times, she refused to touch it because she thought it was from an evil hand. It was like her instincts were telling her this money was wrong somehow. Now, excuse me, some people think maybe old Jeffrey was, like, pissed that she rejected the money. And others think that the money was a warning or, like, a sign that something was already in the house. And the thing is, and this is kind of the bummer part, we're never really going to know. But I will say this, the timing is suspicious as hell. So here's what makes this case so credible, okay? It wasn't just the family experiencing this, because neighbors heard knocking from outside the house and visitors came and witnessed the phenomenon. This wasn't just the Wesleys, telling the stories to each other in an echo chamber. Other people saw and heard it too. And the family was not happy about it. Samuel tried really, really hard to, like, keep it quiet, because having a haunted rectory is, you know, not really great for your reputation as a religious leader. But eventually it got out and people talk, especially in a small town. So the activity actually continued then through Christmas into the new year. So every night, like, this was going on every single night and sometimes multiple times a night. And the family was just, like, utterly exhausted, terrified, and running on no sleep. Like, that's not good. And then in late January 1717, it just stopped. And suddenly, like, as suddenly as it started, old Jeffrey was gone. No big deal. No explanation. Just, you know, mic drop, I'm out. And silence. So the house was quiet again. Now, here's where John Wesley comes into all of this. Because remember, he was away at boarding school when all of this was going on. And he wasn't there. But when he came home and heard what his family had experienced, he did something incredibly important. He investigated. This is well before he was, like, a famous preacher, before Methodism exists. He's just a teenage kid, but he's methodical, pun intended. So he interviews every single family member separately. He writes down their accounts. He compares details. He's looking for those inconsistencies, for, like, proof of a hoax, or for confirmation that it really happened the way they said. So everyone's story lines up. Like, the details match, the timeline is consistent. Either his entire family, parents, siblings, servants, were all in on, like, this elaborate hoax and, you know, also maintaining it perfectly under questioning from a skeptical teenager, or they're telling the truth about what they experienced. So John Wesley kept these documents his entire life. He referenced this case in his writings and sermons. He never doubted that it happened. This is a man who became one of the most influential figures of religious history, and he believed his family was terrorized by a poltergeist. The Methodist Church has these documents. You can read them. The letters between family members, John's compiled account, Susanna's descriptions, it's all there. And the church doesn't deny that it happened. They just don't make a big deal about it because, you know, it's weird. So, what the hell was old Jeffrey? Right? So let's go through the theories because there are several, and honestly, none of them are completely satisfying whatsoever. But here we go. Theory one, poltergeist activity centered on the teenage daughters. This is the classic explanation. You've got several teenage girls in the house, Amelia, Susanna, Junior, others, you know, etc. Poltergeist cases often involve adolescents, particularly girls who are going through puberty. Now, whew, thank goodness that never happened to me. Just saying. The theory is that some kind of like psychokinetic energy or unconscious stress manifests as physical phenomenon. And it kind of fits, okay? And there are definitely teenagers in the house. The household was tense and money problems. Their father was, you know, a total dick. They were socially isolated. People in town hated them. That's a pressure cooker of a situation, in my opinion. But here's the problem, okay? The phenomena happened when the girls weren't in the room. It happened in parts of the house that like weren't near, and it had like a specific grudge against Samuel, which doesn't really fit the unconscious teenage energy explanation, right? Now, theory two, someone was just straight up fucking with them, right? Like the Wesleys had enemies, real enemies, who had literally set fires. And maybe someone was sneaking into the house, like making noise, moving things, trying to drive them out, like get them out of town or drive them crazy, something of that nature. But how? The family was like on alert. They searched, and visitors confirmed the phenomena. And some of the things that happened, like beds shaking with people in them, doors unlatching by themselves, the whole house then shaking, that's not easy to fake, especially with 18th century technology. Plus, it went on for 2 months. Like, that's a really, really committed prank, in my opinion. And then it just stopped with no one caught, no confession, no evidence. So some people, like when we go into theory three here, there's like the theory of geological activity. Now, some people suggest like seismic activity or underground water causing the vibrations and the sounds. But there's no record of earthquakes or tremors in that area at that time. And it does not explain the intelligence behind it, like the way the patterns are and the responses, and then the specific targeting of Samuel. Now, theory four, mass hysteria or shared delusion. The whole family convinced each other it was happening when it wasn't, or exaggerated normal house sounds into something supernatural. Except, no, because visitors experienced it too. And these were educated people. And this was all, like, all of these happenings were just too specific, too physical. Shared delusion doesn't make beds shake. I'm sorry. Then theory five, it was actually a poltergeist, a spirit, an entity, something we don't understand. You know, like, you know, I'm a believer. And I don't think everything is paranormal in this. And honestly, in most cases out there, most things aren't. But I think there are things we can't explain with our current understanding of reality. And this case, this is one where I land on the side of something genuinely unexplainable happened. Like, absolutely. And here's why. The documentation is just way too good on this. And the witnesses are too credible. And the fact that it stopped and suddenly as it started, that is classic paranormal behavior. That's not human behavior. If it was a hoax, someone absolutely would have slipped up and would have been like, oh yeah, you know, you remember that time? So no. And someone would have confessed eventually, especially as the Wesley's kids became famous. I feel very strongly that it absolutely would have come out at some point. If it was geological or structural, it would have had a pattern based on a time of day related to temperature settling, not the specific 9:45 p.m. and 5 a.m. morning schedule. It wouldn't have responded to Samuel's challenges either. So if it was mass hysteria, it wouldn't have been witnessed by people outside of the family. Something was in that house, something that could make sounds, move objects, shake beds, and apparently had feelings about Samuel Wesley specifically. Was it a spirit, a demon, some kind of energy that we don't even have words for? I don't know. But I believe the Wesley family when they said it happened. So here's what I find most interesting about this case in the bigger picture. The Epworth Rectory poltergeist happened at a really specific time in history. This is the early 18th century. The age of, like, enlightenment is ramping up. Science is becoming more important. Educated people are starting to reject supernatural explanations for things. And yet, here's this educated religious family, people who should be the most skeptical of ghostly nonsense, and they're experiencing something that completely defies rational explanation. Samuel Wesley didn't want to believe it. He actively tried to disprove it, and he couldn't. There's something really human about that, about desperately wanting the world to make sense, to follow rules we understand, and then being confronted with something that just doesn't. And it happened at Christmas. During this season that's supposed to be about peace and family and celebration, instead, the Wesleys spent Christmas 1716 terrified in their own home, listening to invisible footsteps and watching their doors open by themselves. The Victorians, a century later, turned Christmas ghost stories into entertainment. But for the Wesleys, this was real. This was their life. They couldn't just close the book and feel pleasantly spooked. They had to live in that house, sleep in those beds, and wonder every night if it was going to start again. So what happened to the Wesleys after, you know, good old Jeffrey left? They stayed in Epworth. Samuel continued as rector until he passed away in 1735. Susanna lived until 1742. They never experienced anything like old Jeffrey again, at least not what was documented. That was documented. So there's nothing further. So John and Charles Wesley went on to literally change religious history. Methodism spread around the world. Millions of people have been influenced by their teachings. And John Wesley, until the day he passed, believed that his family had been visited by something supernatural. Now, the Epworth Rectory itself is gone now. It was torn down and rebuilt, but the story lives on in Methodist history, in physical research records, or research records, in the accounts that John Wesley so very carefully preserved. And every December, when people tell Christmas ghost stories, most of them are fiction, made up to give you, you know, that pleasant little shiver by the fireplace. But the Wesley story, it is a real story, and it did actually happen, and nobody has ever adequately explained why or how or anything. So, all right, that is the story on old Jeffrey and the Epworth Rectory poltergeist. So I would love to know what you think of this. I want to hear from you. Do you buy the skeptical explanations, or do you think the Wesley family really did experience something paranormal? So, and let me know too, have you ever had any of your own experiences, like any sort of phenomenons in your house that you couldn't explain? Hit me up on Instagram. The Instagram is at creepy_shit_podcast. You could also hit me up on TikTok at creepyhoststar. Please leave a comment, send me a message. I love hearing your stories. I love hearing your theories. It's so amazing to connect with you. If you do just have one extra second, if you could please help the ratings of this show, that would mean a lot, because that allows us to get forward and in front of more ears, so to speak. So please, please, please leave a 5-star rating. And if you have an extra minute, write a review. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it, tell your friends, all that good stuff. And I cannot wait for our bonus episode later this week. So get ready, because it is definitely holiday vibes this week. All right, you guys, remember, sometimes the creepiest shit is also the truest. Bye.